Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this Kingborough Council meeting. It is Monday, the 28th of September 2020. It's 5:30 p.m. My name's Dean Widger. I'm the Mayor of Kingborough, and it is my pleasure to declare this meeting open and welcome everyone who's joining us on Facebook for yet another live stream. We got about 1,100 views of this meeting last time, which was exceptional, and hopefully this can be just as interesting and as many people can join us again tonight. So to start the meeting, I'll let everyone know that not only are we live streaming on Facebook and the video will be there for forever, probably. We also record the meetings and we put that audio recording on our website, and you can access that by going to kingborough.tas.gov.au if you'd like to listen back to any of this evening's proceedings. The next item this evening is to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, and I'd like to pay our council's respects to those traditional and original custodians of the land, who are the Mulneena people. I acknowledge the contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to maintain and fight for their identity, their culture and Indigenous rights. Next on the agenda this evening is to list the attendees, and they are myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Fox, Councillor Grace, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Wass. From our staff, we have our General Manager, Gary Arnold, Deputy General Manager, Tony Ferrier, Chief Financial Officer, John Breen. Our Executive Manager of Engineering Services is David Reeve. Our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services is Daniel Smee. Our Communications and Engagement Advisories, Sarah Wilcox. And apologies this evening, Councillor Paula Reet is an apology. Next item is the confirmation of minutes, and there is a draft recommendation, or there's a recommendation in the minutes that says that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 17 held on the 14th of September 2020 be confirmed as a true record. Would anyone like to move and second that? Councillor Fox moves and seconded by Councillor Bastone. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motions carried unanimously. The next item is to let the public know about our workshops that we've held since the last council meeting, and on the 21st of September, we held a workshop on zero net emissions. Page 2 has our declarations of interest. Would anyone like to declare an interest in this evening's meeting? Councillor Grace.
And the Bowls Club, in closed session.
Sure. Councillor Grace, senior Katie, you'd like to. Is that on the Kingborough Bowls Club item?
Yep.
So Councillor Grace will be declaring an interest. That, will you be leaving the room, Councillor Grace, or just declaring an interest? Yep. Just so we'll be remaining in the room and declaring an interest. There are no other lights on, which means there are no other interests to declare. Next item is the transfer of agenda items. Does any councillor wish to transfer an agenda item this evening? Again, there are no lights on, so we'll move on. Questions without notice from the public. As I've been saying recently, unfortunately, we still are not in the position to admit members of the public to the gallery due to COVID restrictions. However, we are encouraging members of the public to put their questions on notice, and you can see that in the next item, questions on notice from the public, where Ms Quinn Liu has put a question there about the customer service charter, and there's a response there from our General Manager, Gary Arnold. For those wishing to put a question on notice in the future, you can do so by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Address your question clearly as a question on notice to the General Manager, and that will be included in our next council meeting, which will be held on the second Monday of October. Right. Next item, questions without notice from councillors. Councillor Fox.
I have two. The first one is relating to the closure of James Lane at Kingston Beach. Could council provide an explanation for the recent closure of the public walkway, James Lane? And could council provide details of when this popular walkway access to and from Kingston Beach will be reopened to the public?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, so that particular walkway has been closed because of some development works at the side of the walkway. At the moment, we've served a notice on that particular property to stop work because they've excavated too close to the walkway, so it's actually unsafe for people to be using the walkway. In terms of when it will reopen, it will depend on when we get a satisfactory response back from the developer in terms of actually rectifying the works so that we can then open the walkway safely, which we anticipate to happen very shortly.
Thank you. I have another question. It's to do with Brightwater Road, which is currently being upgraded between Sherbert Oval and going up the hill towards Howden. Could Council consider providing a bike lane on the left-hand side going uphill? And if that's not possible in the configuration of the road, would it be possible to have the centre line made off-centre to allow room for bikes travelling uphill?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. That will depend on the width of the road, whether that can actually accommodate that particular configuration. What I can do is go back and check on that and provide a written response back.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor.
And then Councillor Mitchell.
Sure thing. My question is about a job guarantee proposal. On Wednesday the 23rd of September, the Parliament of Tasmania passed a motion calling on the government to investigate a job guarantee, and the idea of the job guarantee is that local councils would be the conduit to provide some of the work for people who are willing to work and volunteer for a program. So on the 28th of January, I actually asked a question about young people in Kingborough not in education, employment and training, and on the 11th of February, I received a very helpful response using ABS data, which said, extrapolating from those figures, it suggests that there are 500 young people in Kingborough who are currently not in education, employment or training, but this is a very rough estimate. So my question is, thinking now about that job guarantee motion that passed the State Parliament, has the Kingborough Council considered what work it might provide if a job guarantee were to pass, and is there a plan to do more work on a job guarantee to employ Kingborough's not in education, employment and training young people? Thanks.
Councillor Cordova, unless the General Manager corrects me, the answer is no. You'd be welcome as a member of this council to bring a notice of motion around a job guarantee if you wish. I did note that the Tasmanian Parliament passed a motion to that effect, but as a councillor, you'd be welcome to bring an item like that to us at any time. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a few questions related to the corporate communication strategy. And the first one is in regards to the reconciliation plan. I noted there was stating that council staff will be working on development of a reconciliation plan, and I'm wondering what stage that would be.
Ms. Wilcox.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you. The Reconciliation Action Plan engagement is on hold at this time due to the priority on COVID working and resources at this time. I'm not sure when that's going to come back to Council at this stage.
Thanks, Ms. Wilcox.
Thank you. A further question from that strategy. I noted that there was a plan for a marketing strategy for the Kingborough Hub, and I wonder if this was developed prior to the Hub coordinator leaving.
Mrs. May.
Through you, Mayor, our Hub coordinator was unfortunately unable to produce that document. He'd done some preliminary work, but it's a long way off being complete.
Thank you. A question related to the waste strategy. I noted in the waste strategy it states, implement a food waste evidence program, love food, hate waste. I'm wondering, has that ever been implemented? And if we could have some more information about that, please.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Not at this stage. There'd be a number of things that are in the strategy there that are yet to actually kick off. So it's obviously a strategy that goes over a number of years. So our main initiatives was to certainly deal with the green waste side of things there, dealing with some of the home composting and some of the other initiatives there. But that will be one that we'll be looking at, and in particular, I guess, a raft of some of the education raft of education initiatives that we can actually put in place.
Thank you. While at the futsal games at the sports centre on Friday night, I happened to open up a recycling bin and noted quite a large number of coffee cups. I'm wondering at all if we can do an audit of the bins at the sports centre, the recycling bins, and perhaps take action similar to what's happened at the Kingston Beach recycling bin signage.
I'm not sure if that would be Mr Smee or Mr Reeve. Mr Smee doesn't look as enthusiastic as Mr Reeve. Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, yeah, look, we're happy to take that on board and have a look at that one.
Councillor Grace.
Yeah, just one issue. The Kingston Playground, what is the actual estimate expenditure on that? Was $5 million? I read in the paper where people are quoting that we're spending $7 million there. What is the actual figure, and when are we likely to get a report on the financial status of the playground?
Councillor Grace, we received a report on the status of the project, I think, not last meeting, the meeting before, so we're receiving regular reports about Kingston Park, including that. But for the price, I might defer to the Deputy General Manager for the exact price of the playground. Deputy General Manager.
Through the Chair, the $5 million figure is correct.
I think some of the other figures relate to the associated public works. Obviously, there's a lot of car parking, roads, lighting, so it's a different estimates depending on the scope, but specifically for the playground, $5
million. So the costing for that stuff, is that coming out of council's kitty or is that coming out of the state government with this approving of the
this is it's a council project and council's paying for the public infrastructure. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I forgot I have two more questions. They're related to the Mayor's communications in the appendix. The one on the 18th of August regarding the meeting with Kingston High School and Council's ongoing partnerships. Just wondering, I'm not aware of what the partnerships are, if that could please have some explanation.
The partnership is almost exclusively to do with the sports centre. So Kingston High School doesn't have its own sporting facilities and uses the Kingborough Sports Precinct, including Lightwood. And so that's the predominantly what the discussion was about, but the principal and myself discussed how we could continue to work on that. There's opportunities coming up for the school. They want to really focus on their sports curriculum in years 11 and 12, and with the NBL team coming, there's an opportunity for them to have specific athlete development programs with a new NBL team, but also with other clubs. So the same way the discussion was a lot about the future direction statement and the opportunities that the school have to work with the clubs that are at semi-professional and with the NBL team professional level and how we can better engage with those clubs.
Great, thank you. And another one, the 26th of August, the NSTC Transport Mode Study.
Yes, the Northern Suburbs Transit Corridor. So in solidarity with the Mayor of Glenorchy and Mayor of Hobart, I went to the briefing about the Northern Suburbs Transit Corridor and I didn't make very much a contribution at all. I sat there and listened, and yeah, it's not a big issue for Kingborough, but as City Deal partners, we attend these meetings and participate silently, as I did. Any further questions without notice? No, in that case, we'll move on. The next item is questions on notice from councillors. Question one is on the Environmental Fund from Councillor Cordova. Question two is on pruning of trees from Councillor Bastone. Question three is retrospective application for clearing of land from Councillor Bastone. And question four is on delegated authority report in the appendix from Councillor Reet. Next item is motions of which notices have been given. The notice of motion is actually from myself, so under the local government meeting procedures regulations, what I do now is hand over to the Deputy Mayor, who will chair the meeting just for this period in which I do a notice of motion.
Thank you, Mayor. We have before us a notice of motion from Councillor Winter. Councillor Winter, would you like to move that motion?
Yes.
And do I have a seconder?
I would like to second it.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Winter.
Thank you. Look, the notice of motion is that Kingborough Council will move a motion at the next local government Association of Tasmania meeting about the Code of Conduct panel and its operation. I don't do this lightly, but I think we've been pretty patient as a sector, and at the most recent Local Government Association of Tasmania meeting, there was genuine discontent at the way that the Code of Conduct panel is operating. In fact, there's quite a level of distress within local government about the repercussions of some of the decisions that have been made by this panel. So I don't bring this lightly, and it's not intended to be a personal reflection on any member of the panel, but it is a reflection on some of the truly outrageous and bizarre decisions that they have been handing down. They haven't just been... they have been the subject of ridicule in the tabloid media, but also within the sector and also in public. The problem with the way that the panel is operating is that it puts the operation of ourselves as elected members in question, and almost any interaction we have with the public could be seen to be a breach of the code. In fact, some of the decisions they've made don't even fully reflect the code of conduct. In fact, they seem to have invented new parts of the code in some decisions, particularly in the Wilson case. I've listed in the background of this motion just some of the decisions that this code of conduct has made. The chairperson of the panel elected to undertake a full investigation into whether a defendant in a previous code of conduct case had lied about mints being handed out at council meetings. That was the Huon Valley council meeting, where unfortunately Councillor Wilson was the subject of numerous code of conduct complaints, and in fact that second one you would have to say is vexatious. The chairperson could have decided not to investigate, yet did, and albeit whilst the code of conduct panel did not find that there was a breach, it did waste its own time investigating, I think that one for 4 months, whether or not there had been a breach, and the bill goes straight to the Huon Valley ratepayers. A council was found to have breached part 7.1A of the Code of Conduct in a Facebook post despite having not actually named the complainant, and that was in in the Mike Wilson case as well, and it's listed in the background of this motion. The panel found that a councillor must avoid making public comment that can be seen to take a particular side of a debate of an issue that may be an item of council business or express negative views about a ratepayer. Can you imagine that we're in a situation where we are not able to express a view about anything that could possibly come to this council at a future time? You couldn't say that you're unhappy with a pothole because it could come to council for consideration. You couldn't say that you're unhappy with the state of a playground. The decision was plainly ridiculous, but it puts us all, I think, on edge as elected members. The third one is a councillor who breached, according to the panel, part 1.1 of the Code of Conduct about bringing an open mind to a council meeting, and that was Mayor Rockliffe at Devonport. The panel decided that it was the arbiter of whether she had run the annual general meeting of that council properly. Now, she hadn't run the meeting probably as I would, and I think she would admit, and she did admit, that she made some mistakes, but there's no doubt that she didn't breach the code of conduct in the way that the panel found she did. They said that she didn't have an open mind because during the meeting she made her mind up to close the meeting. The code of conduct just says that you must bring an open mind to a council meeting. It doesn't say that you have to have an open mind for the entirety of it. Our job is to make decisions and to come up with decisions, yet the panel found that she had breached it. A more patronising attack on an elected member you would not find than that decision document. It's just plainly wrong, and that the mayor in that case just had to accept it, really. And the last one I found was the one from Sorrell, where Councillor De Williams was alleged in a sense of her word against the complainants. She was found to have breached the code of conduct by saying, "I need to get away from here." away from a certain person. Now, she didn't admit that she said a certain person. She just said, I need to get away from here. She admitted that bit. Yet that was found to be a breach of the code of conduct. There should have been a presumption of innocence there for it. I don't have a legal background, but I do have a common sense background, and I think that the decisions of this panel wouldn't pass a pub test, and I certainly think that they've been eroding confidence in elected members' ability to do their job and feel confident in their interactions with people. The code of conduct is an important mechanism in local government, and can be held and should be held and used when needed, but it hasn't been by this panel, and I'd urge you to support this.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Winter. Do we have any other contributions?
I could go on with some more issues regarding code of conduct, but we haven't got enough time in the night. And again, I feel sorry, as the Mayor has mentioned, some other councillors throughout. I reflect straight away to the poor Mayor at Turkamord and Spring Bay.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. For my contribution... Oh, sorry, Councillor Woss. Okay. For my contribution, I will reflect on two code of conflicts that were lodged against me from my second council meeting ever. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, I've stuffed up the job and I'm only the second week in. So I guess from the perspective of a councillor who is subjected to vexatious code of conduct complaints that were found to have no substance, I might add. It is very stressful, and they do drag on for quite some time. It's very difficult to talk about them because you're not supposed to discuss the issue. There is often a lot of background to code of conduct complaints that goes before them. And I guess one of the things in my finding by the panel was that I had not breached the code of conduct because in my email to someone I had said, I will not engage with you on this issue anymore. And it was only because I had said on this issue that I hadn't breached the code, because apparently we're supposed to engage with everyone on everything, regardless of how disrespectful or rude they can be. So I understand the role of an elected representative is to represent the people, but I think that on occasions the code of conduct needs to be strengthened, not just to protect the people we represent, but to represent us as individuals from bullying and harassment from the public against vexatious claims. I support this motion, but I just want to make it clear that in supporting a motion of no confidence in the Code of Conduct panel, it's nothing against the individuals that make up the panel. It's more about the structure and the rules that stipulate how it works. I suggest that general managers might be given a greater or more a clear criteria for when they can and can't pass on code of conduct complaints, because obviously if someone makes a complaint to a general manager, they have to make their own decision, and I guess it must be hard to make a call that you're not going to pass that on to a code of conduct panel. And then once something has been passed to a panel, I think there should be more criteria that stipulates how a determination should or shouldn't be made, so that vexatious and trivial things that should never become the subject of formal investigations can be ceased sooner. So I support the motion, and I'll hand over to Councillor Woss for his contribution.
Yes, thank you, Deputy Mayor. I remember when the Code of Conduct was first discussed by the Government of the day in the introduction, and as councils, I think, statewide, there were many, many concerns, and certainly over the years, those concerns have become more alarming, and I think the Mayor has touched on some good examples to show why there are concerns and why some of the frivolous accusations do go the full length of time, where really common sense would dictate that they would be turfed out and everything would move on, bearing in mind, of course, that the council that councillor is representing gets a bill at the end of the day. So it's not as if there is no monetary penalty. And there is a monetary penalty to that council, win, lose or draw. I was a little concerned when we had the Minister for Local Government here only a matter of weeks ago, and quite frankly, I didn't think he took much of an interest in the code of conduct issue when we raised it. I was very disappointed, and as a past councillor and mayor, he should have been right across it. I'm happy to support you, Mayor, on this recommendation. I'm just wondering whether or not we should in fact amend it to call and after the motion of no confidence, and to call on the Minister to take an active role to bring about a satisfactory code, because we have to get the message to the powers to be, and I think we can simply say that there's a lack of, or we have a no confidence vote, but I think for us to be positive, we have to point the direction forward, and the point the direction forward is part of that motion being call on the Minister to take an active role to bring about a satisfactory code, and I would, with your approval, move that amendment.
Would you like to ask the mover and seconder if they would be happy to accept?
So am I. You've stolen my thunder with that, but I'm really pleased you raised that. Thank you.
So, So just to clarify...
Yeah, that'll do.
So, Councillor Winter, are you happy to accept that amended motion? Okay. So, just for those viewers via Facebook, Councillor Woss has suggested an amendment to the motion, and it reads that Kingborough Council will move a motion of no confidence in the Local Government Code of Conduct Panel at the next Local Government Association of Tasmania General Meeting and call on the Minister for Local Government to take an active role in resolving the issue. So I have an indication from the mover and the seconder.
Yes.
Are you happy? Both happy to accept that amendment. That becomes the motion we're discussing. Councillor Woss, do you have anything
Finished.
Further?
Finished.
Sorry. Councillor Fox.
Yes, I'd like to echo what Councillor Woss has said. When Minister Sheldon visited us a few weeks ago, a lot of issues of concern were raised with him, and I felt the attitude towards our concern was not satisfactory. I reminded the Minister that we are not covered by privilege as members of Parliament are, and we are directly held responsible legally for mistakes that we make or for speaking out of turn in other ways. And the code of conduct is just another way of us being, I guess we're aware of our responsibility, but we're also vulnerable if it is not used properly and appropriately. And I feel we are vulnerable by being subjected to, or to see other councillors subjected to perhaps inappropriate use of the code of conduct. And I think it's very important for local government in general that we are free to speak our mind within caution and discretion, of course, but that we aren't stifled in the debate and that we are able to contribute significantly to the debate around the table without feeling threatened. And I think that's... I'm really pleased that Councillor Woss has... that Councillor Winter has put this motion and Councillor Woss has amended it to include the Minister in this consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Do you have a question?
Question, Councillor? Yeah. I mean, we're saying, with all due respect, I just want to clarify the fact that we are saying, well, we're not victimising the conduct panel, but in that sentence up there, if I was on the panel, I'd be offended. Sorry, Councillor?
If they're offended, then they might have to take a code of conduct against this, Councillor Grace.
Thank you. Are there any other contributions? Councillor Winter.
No, I've got a long meeting ahead, so I won't summarise too much, but thanks to everyone's contribution. I think Councillor Wass's amendment has improved the motion.
Thank you. So the motion we have in front of us, moved by Councillor Winter, seconded by Councillor Fox, is that the Kingborough Council will move a motion of no confidence in the Local Government Code of Conduct panel at the next Local Government Association of Tasmania General Meeting and call on the Minister for Local Government to take an active role in resolving the issue. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
All those against? The decision is unanimous. I'll hand back over to you to chair.
Thanks, Deputy Mayor. The petition still being actioned is the next item, and the following petitions are still being actioned, and an officer's report will be tabled at a future council meeting, and that's on waste collection at tinderbox and unisex bathrooms for schools and public facilities. Page 6 also sees petitions received in the last period, and there were no petitions received in that last period since our last meeting. So we move to the first of our more substantive items, and that is on page 7, and it's the North West Bay River Multi-Use Trail Feasibility Study Community Engagement. There's a recommendation on page 9. Would anyone like to move it? Councillor Cordova and Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor, and I'm very pleased and privileged to move this motion and also to move this process forward. So what we're looking at here tonight is the report that provides a summary of feedback in relation to the North West Bay River Multi-Use Trail Feasibility Study and the proposed amendments in response to what was a really successful community consultation process to be incorporated into the final report for endorsement. So I am pleased to report that the key message here is that there is overwhelming support for a multi-use trail, with a total of 160 people being engaged in this process, contributing to 125 ideas, 474 voters, and 25 comments via the Our Say platform. So this process ran for 4 weeks, and I think it's a terrific testament to the popularity of open space and recreational activities and improving health and wellbeing and getting out into nature. Clearly there's an enormous appetite in the community for these kinds of options, and indeed as the municipality grows in population, there will be a greater call for it, as is reflected in our tracks and trails strategy. So what I like about this, and I want to pay special thanks to Sue Sprott for our recreation officer for all the amazing work in putting this together. What we're seeing now is that rather than these things sitting on a shelf, we're now asking for some money to progress into the next stage and to incorporate some of the community concerns and also the community ideas that were there. So part of this feasibility study was to assess the natural and cultural values in the area and the corridor of the preferred route to enable the route to avoid and minimise any impact on significant conservation and cultural values, and so this is part of that ongoing work that will be undertaken. One of these findings of the feasibility study was that the trail can be routed and constructed to minimise impacts on natural values, and we will be doing further detailed impact studies that will be required to avoid any impacts to threatened flora and fauna or habitat, and detailed Aboriginal heritage surveys will be required as well. There was, as I mentioned before, terrific community engagement on this, and it wasn't without its criticisms and constructive criticisms, I might add. So there were a few issues which have been identified, and some of those have been ameliorated going forward in the final report, but also there'll be plenty of room for those kinds of things to be considered. So what we're talking about here is different groups sharing the multi-use trail. There's horse riders, mountain bikers, walkers, and also there's maybe a third of people who responded to the survey talking about dog walking and the potentials there. But, of course, there's obviously environmental issues on the other side of that. There was also some landowner issues that need to be resolved and ongoing maintenance costs of whatever ends up being there. But the multi-use trail feasibility study is a terrific piece of work, and the fact that this has now gone out to consultation and received such great interest and overwhelming positive support, I think puts us in good stead as a council to progress this. So the recommendation here is that we're not only endorsing the final draft of the multi-use trail feasibility report, but also approving an allocation of $15,000 to be made from the Public Open Space Fund to commence initial survey work to determine those boundaries. So I'm very pleased to be privileged enough to be the one to move this forward, and I commend it to the council.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor, and I do thank Councillor Cordova for summarising the report. I guess in around about 1989, I initiated the North West Bay River Committee, which with a group of residents, and we have done multiple feasibility studies since then, and there's also been a tracks and trails committee established by council, and this particular route, or at least the North West Bay River, was part of that strategy. However, I'm disappointed that up till now so little money has been spent in this area. I noticed in the new study that the route of this new walk along the Crown land particularly, and Council's public open space land, is on the northern side of the river. Well, up till now, my understanding was that we were focusing on the southern part of the river, which is the Margate side of the river. I guess that's where a lot of the houses lead down to the river, and there's resistance from people not wanting the track to go through their backyard, but there may also be environmental issues that we are avoiding those regions. The concept now is to go on to the cliffy northern side of the river, but at the same time looking at environmental impacts there and having possibly users like horses and even bike riders and walkers, and even considering dogs, but I'm not sure how that would go. But I would like to see not only this money that's being proposed in this motion for $15,000 to be allocated from the Public Open Space Fund to do the survey work to determine the boundaries, but also a commitment from Council that we actually put some money in the budget to do some of the works that would emanate from... that would come from this report. It's one thing to do the survey, but the amount of money that we would need to do this track and to do justice to the 33 years of hard work that's gone into trying to get something done on this river, on this walk, I think we just need to consider having a strategy of putting some money in the budget every year to do a part of this walk. And I wonder whether such a study, a survey or a strategy has already been considered by Council, or would this be the next step that we might look forward to? Is there anybody and staff who could comment on my plea?
Through you, Mayor, this is very much the next step in terms of proving that the trail is feasible, and then that then makes it a shovel ready project, if you like, that we could apply for external funding for. There was a federal funding program announced today that would lend itself very well to this particular project. But failing being able to secure substantial external funding, Councillor Fox, your suggestion of chipping away and doing a stage at a time through Council's annual budget process is the next most logical means of obtaining funding, and that's certainly what staff would look to do, would be to put in a capital bid for next financial year to do the first stage of this project.
Thank you very much. I'm greatly heartened by that, and I think that this is the first catchment study that has ever been done in Tasmania, and it's significant in terms of the environmental benefits to this community that we have such an intact environment and with such high values. And also, all our studies show that walking is the number one recreation activity that the community can prefers, and the amount of money that this council puts towards walking needs to be more, because we spend so much money on team sports, on maintaining ovals and twin ovals, etc. But I do think it's important that we see the balance that the ordinary mums and dads and children who all have the opportunity to walk, that there's more money spent on walking. Thank you.
Councillor Westwood, and then Councillor Grace, and then Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm pleased to see the response to the consultation we undertook on this. Trail running and the use of trails is becoming more and more popular. I think a lot of people did too much running on pavement, on pavements during COVID, so now we're all on the trails. I'm not sure that this project is feasible for council to undertake on its own, but I would like to see us go ahead in progressing this to get some surveying done and to work out a plan forwards and to get a plan done that we might be able to ask for some help in funding, potentially from our state or Commonwealth partners. I note that the Public Open Space Reserve in August had $902,000 in it, so I think expending $15,000 from that reserve is completely reasonable. I would like to see dog walking considered for the track. I'm hopeful that that won't be discounted because there are a lot of people in Kingborough with dogs. They are part of people's families and dog walkers do use our tracks and trails. Kingborough has amazing tracks and trails. We're very, very lucky. They're in a very high... they're at a very high standard and they're very user-friendly, and my personal experience is that they provide great value to our community. So I support this recommendation.
Yeah, it's very interesting, as Councillor Fox has mentioned. Many a night we've sat out the back to midnight debating this Norwest Bay rivulet and what should be done and what shouldn't be done. There's quite a few articles been done regarding it. Council did pay for, some were paid by the government, the willow tree removal, etc. Yes, I can see this being a fairly sensible project, but again, if it's just going to be stamped and that's the end of it, it will go nowhere. Like, I mean, as Councillor Fox mentioned, I think it's 20 years now since we first debated it, and as I've mentioned in council before, we've also done a river flow study on Norwest Bay, which was implemented by the Tas Water, I think, or Hobart City Council some years ago. I've still got a copy of that report. As I mentioned before, the significance of the Margate pump station and the old bridge, Councillor Wast, you used to walk up to the swinging bridge, I think we used to call it up there. The scouts used to use it all the time beyond the weir at Norwest Bay. So all this, again, is history. And again, it could be used as a... I noticed at Clarence the other day when I was going out to Sorrel, they got that bikeway there by that nasty roundabout there, and this is something that we could do too, is share as a bike, have trials for the kids and races on that through that area. Would there's so many things imaginable that you could do with that up through there. I think getting the design, but I think the survey, I think we need a design, something as a draft that we can go like we did at the Margate to Snug walkway and really get the hammers in when it becomes elections and a bit of money floating around, because it's so. And I do know for a fact too that the farmer, Mr. Timmy Walk, is very keen. He is very, very keen to help and see this project through. I'm quite sure that he'd be very, very interested in working with council to make this happen.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. Reading through this document, I think the first stage is obviously the organising of the right-of-way over private property and to actually... see what's feasible. And as Councillor Fox said, this is good for ordinary mums and dads. Ordinary mums and dads have dogs, their kids have bikes, but not many ordinary mums and dads have horses. And I think it's a very difficult to have a shared trail that has horses, bikes, dogs, and people walking with small children. And I think the time will come after we've done the surveying to actually bite the bullet and say, well, as a shared trail, it's going to be people and horses, or it's going to be people, dogs and bikes. I really don't think that we can have it all, but I think that's in the future. I think the main thing is to actually first find out if we can actually do the trail.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. As other councillors have shared, it is an exciting project and it's great that we can progress this rather than stagnate on the findings and things that we have so far. And thank you very much, councillors, Councillor Fox and Councillor Grace, for the history in regards to this, that it has been on the tracks and trails and discussion with many groups for 20 years or so. 30 years. It's important for us to remember that as we do go forward, and also Councillor Fox's comment in regards to the tracks and trails budget and actually what is put in place there. From my understanding, is there actually a budget line for specifically for tracks and trails, or is that in the public open space? Is that the process or track maintenance?
Mr. Smee.
Oh, Mayor, we certainly do have a track maintenance budget. It's $200,000 per annum.
Thank you. But in regards to actually the development and vision to put dollars towards development of further tracks and trails, is that money from the open space budget?
So the proposal here is for the feasibility to come from $15,000. Nothing to say it couldn't come from the open space budget in the future, but more likely, I think, from Mr. Smee's early comment, it would come from our capital works budget. Is that right, Mr. Smee?
Yes, Mayor. The open space fund could well be a source to progress this, but what we do, we'd put it up as a capital bid, and then the final decision on whether that's capital funding or open space funding would be made through that process.
Thank you for that clarification. So as stated by Councillor Bastone, there will be possibly, most certainly, potential conflict between the different user groups. We know that all the user groups are very passionate about what their interests are, but hopefully we can come to some agreements and compromises regarding that in the future. And I noted that in the report, some of the user groups didn't feel like they were consulted. However, I do note that there will be future input and engagement for those user groups to have a say. Another question is around, so in regards to this coming back to council again after the survey report, I guess, what do we sort of vision as the next stages and the future of progressing this?
So, Mayor, what we're asking you to endorse tonight is the final feasibility report, which is the report that tells us that this trail is feasible. Obviously, from here, we need to do the finer detail work. I would imagine that sections of this trail will require a development application, and then certainly there's management decisions for council to make around, once we have a trail, who do we let on it, and under what conditions. So that's the type of information that will be coming back to council in the future, along with how do we fund it, of course.
Councillor Watson and then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I fully endorse the recommendation. We're talking about the final draft. We're not talking about what needs to be changed or altered or amended. And I'm happy for that to take its journey down the line to have an outcome approved and decided at the end, and certainly Part B approving the allocation of $15,000 to get some initial survey works done. This trail has the potential of being the number one trail in our municipality. We used to always look after and protect the Allencliffs Trail. That was closed because of safety reasons. It was reopened. And I believe council made the wrong decision when they reopened it. It hasn't got the support, it hasn't got the enthusiasm that it used to have. From the time that this one has hit the community, there has been a real let's get up and go. The community definitely want it. There are a lot of benefits. There's been contact, and I can only speak with myself, but I assume everyone else as well, that there's been contacts even further in southern Tasmania about it. So if there is that amount of interest, thank you. If there's that amount of interest now, imagine what it's going to be like. From Council's perspective, there is one requirement, and that is that if we go ahead, and I sincerely hope we do, and I will be voting that we do, but there is a commitment by Council to bring the track to reality. It's not going down and then saying it's too hard, A, financially, or it's too hard work-wise, or it's too hard that no one wants it. We have to continue with it, and we have to look at how we're going to undertake it. I think work can be undertaken section by section. Obviously start with the easiest and the less financial sections. And certainly being a country track, I would suggest that we would be looking at a square or diamond standard to start with, because it is a country track, it's not a city track. And then if council wishes to, if you like, take out those risers and do those to bring it to a flat track, then it can be done at a later stage. So what I'm really saying there is let's get the track up and running rather than looking at doing gold-plated for this section, that section and the next section. Because if we're going to do it gold-plated, we will never get to the end. We have to get up and run with it. There are some concerns, and obviously the protection of the natural environment, particularly in the riparian area, is much necessary. And certainly with the number of fords and or bridges, I think we should be looking at those with the idea that we can reduce those wherever possible. Do we really want bridges? I don't believe that we do, personally. But again, that might be the issue at the end, that we need a bridge or we need two bridges. But personally, I'd like to see no bridges. And certainly, you know, we know that there's a four-wheel drive section that's being used. I mean, that to me is maybe one of the two or three starting points that we can use. But let's have a loop to start with, and then extend the next loop. So section by section, let's go forward. As I said, this has the potential to be our number one track within the municipality. There's a great opportunity, and I think we need to grab it with both hands and go with it. So therefore, I do recommend the recommendation. Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, there's not much left to be said that hasn't already been said, but I just wanted to add my support to the draft plan that we've received, or the draft feasibility study that we've received, and just say, look, the next step is going to be important, which is the which is actually funding this to get it done. Has the potential to be an amazing asset for the community, and it'll be up to us to try and figure out how to fund it. But I think that's something that we are going to have to do, and we're going to have to do it sooner rather than later, one way or another. So put on my record, on record, my support for the project and my support for finding a solution to the funding of it in whatever way we can.
Councillor Grace, you'd have a question.
Yeah, a question. Councillor Cordova raised a question, or raised an issue about funding through the government. Now, would this not, my question would be, this surely would be an ideal project to put forward for job seekers.
Mr. Smee mentioned earlier about a grants program that's just come out. Did you want to answer this question, Mr. Smee?
Mayor, that was a tourism-related grant, not specifically related to JobSeeker.
Can we take this seriously then and pursue the avenue with this JobSeeker? They're looking for getting work for people down here.
So a motion passed through the Parliament last week. By the Greens, and passed through the Parliament. It's simply a motion through the Parliament. So. We would need to see if the state government is going to offer a program or something like that. Obviously, if they do a program, then we would look to work with them. We would keep an eye on that. Councillor Cordova, to sum up.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I'm really pleased with with the tenor of this conversation. I think we've had a really robust conversation. We've heard some really good points. My takeaway here is that the report is really transparent about the issues that were raised, and there's a really been a genuine attempt to get across all of those issues. And it is overwhelmingly positive, but also we all recognise around this table that there are some things we need to overcome. So what we've heard here today is taking learnings from history and learning from how we can do things better as we move forward. We know that there is a desire for action among the community, and that's reflected by simply the sheer number of, 160 people engaged in the forum, 125 ideas, 474 votes, 2,000 unique visitors to that forum. Probably 1,000 of those were me checking the comments, because some of them were really positive and others of them were really clever and innovative. The ideas of connecting further to Kainani, Mount Wellington, the ideas about, making sure that we do our due diligence with river crossings and maintaining the cultural and natural values, protecting the riparian zone. I like that this report is transparent about those issues and it doesn't shy away. And the fact that we're doing such good planning now, and I hope that this will pass resoundingly soon, or tonight, we'll be able to then take that Public Open Space Fund money and initiate that survey work. And by doing all this planning correctly, which we're doing now, I think we'll be in a very good position to seek external funding. And indeed, as Councillor Grace just mentioned, it's a great opportunity to increase the economic activity and the jobs growth within the municipality. Because, of course, there's a huge appetite for getting out and about in nature, but doing so in a way that respects nature and is sensitive to cultural and natural values. So I think we've got a terrific opportunity here. I'm really pleased with how well it's come along so far, and I look forward to taking action on the next step. Thank you.
Okay, the motion moved by Councillor Cordover and seconded by Councillor Fox is that Council A endorse the final draft of the Northwest Bay Multi-Use Trail Feasibility Report, and B, approve an allocation of $15,000 be made available from the Public Open Space Fund to commence some initial survey work to determine boundaries. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Move on to the next item, and it's Halls Track Road, recommendation on page 102, looking for a mover and a seconder of the recommended motion. Seconder for that. Councillor Fox would like to second it. Yep. Okay, Councillor Grace.
Looking at this, I guess we should be making sure of is the fact that property 680, I think you refer to, is the one that's mainly in problems with this road. I haven't gone right through that road because I wouldn't take my car through there. But my question is, in the report it says that that property 630 can be accessible through the Huon. Now, should we not then, if we're going to do what's in the recommendation, close it, that 400 metres, should we not then notify all the emergency people, ambulance, police, fire, that road is not accessible for them? They'll have to, or should that house number be transferred over onto the Huon? On the Huon, wherever it gets access off the Huon Highway instead of Halls Track in Kingborough. They are two just questions I'd like to see addressed.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess the entire section of road through this still there. It's just closed to certain classes of traffic rather than being completely closed. So obviously people who were wanted to take that risk, if you like, of using that other section through there, they could. So we have closed it, obviously, to the normal passenger vehicles and the four-wheel drives, but it doesn't stop other things such as larger trucks or other vehicles there that may want to use it. I certainly think that it's fairly common to actually have two sections of road there that may be accessible from two ends there with a bit in the middle that's not, so there's a few of those that kick around the place there, so it's not that unusual to have that situation. So we wouldn't be necessarily going down the track of actually saying
because we put this in place there, let's rename the two sections, or rename one section of the road there. I think that's probably not necessary in this case here, and bearing in mind there's very limited properties that actually come off this section of road as well at the same time there. So I wouldn't necessarily be recommending that as an action going forward.
The question again is, though, through you, Mayor, I understand what brought this on was the fact that an ambulance was trying to get through there to reach a very sick person. It couldn't. It got half, or it got through to the track a certain way and had to stop because it would have taken the bottom out of the ambulance. So they had to sit and wait until they could send a four-wheel drive ambulance there to be able to go in and pick up the sick patient. What I'm saying is, because the address was Halls Track Road off Cayuta Road. And if it was the property, as I'm led to believe, Mayor, which is property number 630, or is it the owner's responsibility to say, well, look, I live in Halls Track Road, but my entrance is off Huon Road. I mean, this must be made clear to the emergency people. That's what I think. I don't know what my colleagues think, but if we're going, and the recommendation is now saying, well, we're going to close it, and I understand it's been closed for, 15 years or something like that, I believe. I asked for the report, and I don't think my colleagues will spend the $220,000-odd, $260,000 to do 400 metres of gravel road up to serve one house when it's got another access. And I agree with that, but we must make sure that we write, I'm asked through you, Mayor, that we write to that owners of 260, and we're going to close it. It's closed now, but they still think they've got access. But can we write to them and say, well, OK, council made a decision, we're not going to spend the money, your access should be off Huon Highway or wherever it is.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, there's a process you would need to go through if you wanted to rename a road there. Okay, so I mean, but certainly if you wanted to actually look at a section of road there and actually say you wanted to provide more information back to the property owners to say where they could access it from, that's a fairly easy thing to do in terms of sending that out. If you wanted to rename the road there, that is a bit more of a difficult process to actually go through.
I'm not keen on it. It doesn't matter renaming the road. As long as everyone, the state emergency, everyone's aware that they're not going to get over that 400 metres of road. And I'm happy then with a report, Mayor. And I think most of my colleagues will be happy and back me on what I've just stated on the issue.
Thanks, Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox.
I'm pleased that Councillor Grace has moved for discussion because I think it's aired some of his concerns. I have driven on this road in the past, as I think I've said in the past, with a heavily pregnant daughter, and I wished I'd never done it. I thought she was going to lose the baby. It was so rough. And that was 12 years ago. And I think I would foreshadow that I would move the recommended motion. Basically, I think it's not going to be worthwhile spending a lot of money on this road for two properties. And I think if we can, as Councillor Grace says, improve the signage and the awareness with the ambulance people and community services people, we can overcome the concerns that he has. So I would foreshadow that I would move the motion
rather
as recommended.
Rather than foreshadowing it, do you want to just move it?
Because yeah, I'll move it.
For a motion to get...
I'll move that.
Yep, and then seconded by Councillor Westwood. Did you want to make further contributions?
No, I think that's the logical thing to do, and I thank the staff for this very good report. Great. Thank you.
At this stage, there are no other lights on. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you.
And then Councillor Wass.
Councillor Grace, you are right in that I could not approve expenditure of this amount for two properties.
even, so option one, $260,000 with an annual estimated maintenance cost of $12,000 per year, or option two, $120,000 with an annual estimated maintenance cost of $4,000 per year. That's a lot of money. I assume that that the electronic maps you get in your cars and things have been updated to show emergency vehicles and other vehicles that this is not a through road. So if ambulance TAS and police and fire emergency vehicles are using the latest software, which I assume they are, their navigational systems should not direct them through this road. But I guess if we need to improve the signage, then that is one solution. As far as getting access from the Huon Highway, I think that's probably, I don't know if it's an issue for the Lands Title Office or someone else, planning maybe, I'm not sure. Who would help that property owner to change access to their property?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I'm not quite sure of the question. So at the moment they've got access onto Huon Highway, so that's not the issue. I think the issue that Councillor Grace was raising was more on the lines of informing the various property owners of where they would need to access from, and the emergency services, or just re-informing them where they would need to access from as well. And just to cut to the chase, I'm quite happy to actually go through that process there and actually send that information out to the property owners and to the emergency services there, and hopefully that would satisfy Councillor Gross's query on the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve.
Councillor Watts.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I do support the recommendation, and I do have one question that hopefully Mr. Reeve can answer. I couldn't see it in the report anywhere, and I just had another look and still can't find. Who owns the road that we're talking about closing? Does council own that, or is that privately owned? Do you know, Mr. Reeve?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I believe it's council-owned, but I wouldn't be 100% sure there, because we have a number of roads there that are used by the public there but aren't necessarily owned by council, as you're probably aware. But I do believe that one is actually owned by council.
So perhaps the next question, Mayor, is do we intend to dispose of that in the short term?
Mr. Reeve.
Three, Mayor. As I mentioned earlier there, we haven't closed the road completely. We've just closed it to certain classes of traffic there, so it still allows things like farm machinery and so forth to actually access through that road there. So there wasn't any intention at this stage of actually closing the road and selling the land off, which is another process again.
May I just continue, Mayor? I recollect when this item was first mentioned about being closed, and whether there is an obligation on a road to be upgraded or kept upgraded, and if we are allowing certain vehicles on there now, why are we allowing some to use it and not others? And therefore my question of asking and then coming back to, if we're not intending to use it as a road, why don't we dispose of it, even if it's adhered to one of their titles?
Mr. Reeve.
It's a process we could actually go down if we didn't want any other vehicles to use it or wanted to keep there as a private access to those vehicles that did want to use it. Whether those property owners would want to take that on board is another matter, if you like. That would be something that could be explored. Certainly in terms of public roads, council has fairly wide discretion with those in terms of how we maintain them. So we can maintain them to a very low level, if you like a minimal maintenance level if we wish to, which is almost no maintenance, or we can maintain them to a higher level there. So we have a lot of discretion in that area there. So there is no liability in terms of that side of things there as to how we maintain them. As such, so we're I guess lucky in that respect, but if we want to formalise the process of actually if you like selling that section of land, that would probably then lead to looking at the two sections of road that are left there and probably renaming one of those sections as well at the same time for neatness, I'd suspect.
Councillor
Thank you, and that might solve all the problems.
Okay, there are no other lights on at this stage. Councillor Fox, would you like to sum up?
No, thank you.
Okay, the motion is moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Westwood, is that due to the significant cost required to implement option one or two, the closed section of Halls Track Road remains closed to passenger vehicles and four-wheel drives, but with no physical barriers installed so that motorists can still use it at their own risk. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried. Next item is the Audit Panel Charter. Page 104, looking for a mover, Councillor Street. Seconder, Councillor Fox, Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Before us, we've got the updated audit panel charter for approval, updated to take into account changes to the Local Government Act or additions to the Local Government Act, along with the updated remuneration figures. And the inclusion of the ability to meet via video conference. The charter is otherwise, in my view, fit for purpose, and the audit panel continues with its important work under the charter. It is important work, and I know that we have had representations made to us requesting that we perhaps expand the role of the audit panel greater than what it has been previously. I am hesitant to entertain a broadening of the base of the audit panel's work for a couple of reasons. Firstly, the audit panel's work is already extremely broad. Their function in terms of reviewing the operations of council, an important function that it is, and the advice that they give council management and council as well is important, and the audit panel already has very, very broad ability to review essentially every operation of council. What the audit panel doesn't have the ability to do is review individual, do things like review individual complaints, review matters between councillors and the public directly, and the like. I think any move to go in that direction would be a bad idea. At the end of the day, the audit panel is there to provide advice to council, to provide assurance to council and the community that there is an external check on the operation and management of council. And the audit panel and the independent members particularly and our independent chairs over many years have done an excellent job in that function along with our employed auditors. And I have to apologise, Mayor, if I continue to keep speaking, I am going to lose my voice altogether. So I will leave it at that and commend the motion to council.
Mayor, I raised this issue some time back regarding this audit panel, its charter, whatever you want to call it. I personally don't think that this audit panel is doing sufficient. And if you read what it's set out to be, and there's a lot of issues here, they have got a fairly good scope if you read down through what they're commissioned for, but they don't do it. I mean, I raised an issue once or twice about has the auditor panel looked at over expenditure, for instance, on when you're talking over 300,000 over expenditure on contracts, they should be looked at. And I'm told, no, the audit panel don't look at that. So I won't support this, and I think the audit panel should have a free hand. And I think if somebody writes into the audit panel and asks them to look at something, they should. They should not have an agenda set for them. But again, in fairness to them, when you look at their their salaries they get to sit. They don't get an awful lot of money, so they're not going to sit an awful lot of time, and I understand that. So maybe we should look at all that again and work out what we as councillors expect for our ratepayers. That's my view. I won't support this as it is.
Well, just to respond to that contribution, I think it's important to acknowledge, I think Councillor Grace's words were a free hand, that the audit panel should have a free hand, meaning that it should be free to set its own charter. And of course it has here, and it's recommending to Council only three changes to its charter, but the audit panel conducted its own review of the audit panel charter with the attached marked up version highlighting the changes. That's in 4.1, and then 4.2 highlights what the changes were. So I think you've got, if you believe the audit panel should have the autonomy and if you value its independence, then you should favourably consider the motion. Councillor Street, would you like to sum up?
Look, the only thing to add, Mayor, just in relation to Councillor Grace's comments, is that ultimately the audit panel does set its own work plan. The plan of work for the audit panel is not set by Council, it's set by the audit panel itself. So from that perspective, they do have a free hand. There was one other matter that I wanted to note, but I've completely forgotten what it was. I'll leave it at that.
So the motion moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Fox, is that the attached audit panel charter be approved. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
We'll have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Street, Bastone, Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Midgley, Wasson, Winter, and those against is Councillor Grace, and the motion is carried. Next item. We move to the fire risk abatement policy, and there's a recommended motion on page 124 of the agenda. Looking for someone who'd like to move it. Councillor Westwood. And second it. Councillor Bastone. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. The purpose of this report is to review and update Council's fire hazard abatement policy. I'd just like to note that I do appreciate when policies like this come for update, that we do get two versions, one with track changes and then a final version. It makes it really easy to see what specifically has been changed, because sometimes one word might be changed which might change a meaning. So I do appreciate being open and transparent in presenting policy amendments. I just had one question. At 2.1 under definitions, fire risk, anything that an authorised council officer is satisfied may pose, and this is new words, or is likely to pose, a risk of causing or exacerbating the effects of a fire. Can I please have some explanation of what the words or is likely to pose adds to the policy?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. So our process is that we have officers within our compliance unit who undergo specific training in relation to fire risk and the associated abatement procedures. The policy change that's being referred to just adds to their ability to make an assessment that a particular property or a particular fire risk on that property may not currently pose a threat. It could be long grass that is not yet dry, but in a couple of weeks' time, given the weather forecast, it will be dry, and therefore it poses a potential risk. So it's acknowledging that the risk is not just an immediate one, it's one that also exists in the future, and the policy is reflecting our ability to be proactive in that regard.
Thank you. I also note a few of the wording changes from the use of the word hazard to the use of the word risk, and I think that's appropriate. Thank you.
Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I'd just like to ask a question of Mr. Smee through the Chair, if I may. In a responsibility, it says here, recognise wildfire's natural hazard in our environment, the responsibility of all landowners to help minimise the ongoing risk. Now, we have areas of Crown land that I would say are definitely fire hazards, fire risk at the moment. So what do we actually do about Crown land? Can we serve the Crown to clear the land, or do we have to do it? What actually happens there?
Mr. Smee.
We can serve a notice on the Crown if need be. And generally speaking, in relation to this matter, our first approach is one of looking to adopt a cooperative approach rather than directly infringing, but if necessary, we could serve a notice on the Crown.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A question in regards to 126, Permits and Permissions 5.6. I noted that we've taken out information can be found on Council's website and in Council's information brochure, but that is no longer in the updated policy. I'm wondering any information in regards to that. So it's on the website. Sometimes when people go to the website, it's hard to sort of navigate exactly where the information is. Do we not do the information brochure anymore?
Mr. Smee.
Mayor, the intent there is not to provide prescriptive advice that may be misleading. We'd rather that the community contact staff directly to discuss their individual case. We can provide some general information, but there is a risk that that general information is not understood correctly. And so the best approach is to contact our qualified staff in this regard.
Thank you. That makes sense. I note, and I'm not sure if this has any relation, but currently there's a bushfire mitigation measures bill. Is it currently out for public comment? September 16th, I noted and saw it advertised somewhere. I'm wondering at all if there's any correlation or if we have any understanding what that is and the impact on this current policy.
This is me.
Mayor, there's a very slight correlation, and we will be providing some feedback in relation to that bill. And this specific policy is about council's procedures in relation to responding to fire risks that exist on landowners within our community. The bushfire mitigation bill is far broader than that. So this, yes, it's part of it, but it's a very small part of it.
Thank you.
Okay, there are no other lights on, so I'll ask Councillor Westwood if she'd like to close debate. She's closed the debate, and that means that we now consider the motion, which was moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Bastone, and it's the Council endorsed the revised fire risk abatement policy as attached to this report. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against, motion's carried unanimously. We move on now to the asset management strategy, and that starts on page 131, and there's a recommended motion on page 133. Looking for a mover and a seconder. Councillor Wass would like to move.
Mayor, I'd like to move that the item be deferred until the next meeting to after we have our workshop on asset management in case there is something that comes out of that that we regard as pertinent.
So the motion is that the item be deferred until after the asset management workshop. Would anyone like to second that? It would be a procedural motion. There'd be no debate. Councillor Grace would like to second it. Yep. So there's no debate on its procedural motion. The motion was moved by Councillor Wass, seconded by Councillor Grace. I will just point out that we're in breach of the legislation at the moment, and the longer we don't do this, the longer we're in breach. So the motion is that the item be deferred. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
Labor Division, all those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Grace, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Wass, and those against, Councillor Street, Westwood, Fox, Midgley and Winter. The motion is lost. Looking for someone to move the recommended motion. Councillor Westwood. And seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. As pointed out, we are required to have an asset management strategy. The purpose of this report is to update the asset management strategy as it is overdue for review. It links with the asset management policy that was adopted by Council at our last meeting on the 14th of September. The strategy clearly shows the linkages between Council's strategic plan, the recently adopted asset management policy, the long-term financial plan and individual asset management plans for each asset class. I do have some questions for Mr. Reeve. What has been the impact of COVID-19 on the asset management plan and achievement of the strategy?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, not a lot. So we've been quite lucky in terms of where we've been doing our capital works in particular there, which is a major part in terms of making sure we keep our assets renewed there to provide the services they need. But we've been fairly lucky that we haven't had a lot of delays from our contractors during the main part of the COVID period, which was last financial year and into this financial year. How that transposes as we go forward is a little bit of an unknown. We certainly have had some effect with individual contractors that we've had to use there. So we've had some delays such as Conyngham Toilet Block there, which was an interstate contractor there, so it was very difficult to actually get that project moving along. And we've had other individual projects, but on the whole, we've managed to use most of our local contractors and haven't seen any untoward delays or cost increases.
Thank you. You mentioned in the report that other departments of council could be included in the corporate asset management group. What other areas of council were you thinking of including?
Yeah, so at the moment, it's mainly my team from engineering and finance that actually comprise the asset management group around council there. But it certainly could be a wider group there to include people from property management, people from our depot, and potentially other people as well, all the way up to a general manager. Hesitate to say, but I've seen asset management groups that actually have that high level buy-in, so it allows you to actually move on and get particular aspects of the strategy actually achieved as well at the same time. So I think it's just my intention with this part of it is just to give a little bit more oomph or a little bit more emphasis towards gaining some traction in that area.
I think that sounds good. And just so I'm clear, how does the asset management strategy link back to the long-term financial plan in terms of strategic action 3, asset renewal is funded at a rate of 90% of the depreciation rate or higher?
Yeah, so at the moment councils had a long-term financial plan that's been put forward to them there that sets, if you like, a depreciation figure for them to actually aim for. So the asset management strategy and the asset management policies are there to support that viewpoint, but obviously that's subject to change as well, and we expect over the next 4 years or so there's probably going to be changes as well as we go forward. So the intention is to be adaptive to those changes as we need to be. So if council was looking at actually funding a larger amount, or we provided other models that suggested other amounts as well at the same time there, this particular strategy is meant to be flexible enough to actually try and deal with that as well at the same time, so we don't get tied to necessarily that part of it. What we would like to see, and that's just another body of work that comes next, is to actually take our individual asset classes that we've actually got and have asset management plans for those, and then that would then come as a direct feed into the long-term financial plan as well. And when we talked, I think Councillor Wass mentioned before about the upcoming workshop, the bit that I wanted to talk about in that workshop was tied up with some of the work that we've been doing on some of that modelling there. It doesn't necessarily affect this strategy in any shape or form, and in fact the main part of that workshop is actually to do with the maintenance service levels as compared to that. So I'll just put councillors' minds at rest, at ease in terms of that part of it.
Thank you. And just in terms of Kingston Park, are those infrastructure assets included? And how, if not, how are they likely to impact the strategy going forwards?
Some of them are that have come on board at the moment, but not all of them. So we haven't brought all the assets on board. The community hub, which is probably the largest one, hasn't come on board as of yet because we're just in the process of obviously doing some repairs on that one, and then it will come on board after that. It's actually quite, overall, it's actually quite a small part of our overall asset base there. So it's not going to be a large effect in terms of particularly our depreciation figures. So we're not expecting any major shocks for council.
Thank you. There was one more question in relation to the improvement plan. Sorry, I'll just look at my notes. Number 10, identify critical assets and the potential risks of their failure and incorporate this information into Council's asset management system. Timeline July 2024. Why is that? Seems a long way out.
Yes, it is a long way out. It doesn't actually preclude us from certainly making a start on it, but we're hoping to get to an end point in July 24. So identifying the criticality of assets there sounds like it's easy, but it's not really. All the assets are actually different. So certainly stormwater assets are different to transport assets, and identifying which ones of those individual assets in those classes are actually critical and for what reason, because they're all different, is actually quite a body of work. It's probably what we call one of our more advanced management aspects there, so there's a few of them that we actually have, and that would be one. Not many councils have probably gone down that track yet of actually identifying that, so that's why I think we've been fairly conservative in terms of our timeframes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions. The first one is in regards to, I note that for policies we often see the previous policy and any track changes. I'm just wondering at all if what are the significant changes, I guess, in the development of this strategy compared to the previous one?
So the strategy itself has got some similar headings to the previous one, bearing in mind the previous one goes back to 2012 there, so a fair few things have happened since then. If I did try and put track changes into the previous one there, it would be a very messy paper that you would actually see there, because a lot of the wording's changed, a lot of the terminology's changed there. And if you remember from the asset policy that council adopted last meeting there, we put some more emphasis on the environment and also new technology as well, so that's reflected in this strategy as well at the same time. And other aspects that have actually changed over the intervening years are also mentioned there, but you would see some similarities still, because the world of asset management doesn't change that fast, and a lot of the aspects still hold good in terms of that side of things. But I think you'll find with this particular strategy there's just a little bit more detail behind it, and if you went down to the other long-term plans for the individual asset classes underneath, even more detail goes into those ones.
Thank you. I also make note of the 23 improvements, the fact that things have already started to be worked on, and the monitoring process, that it will be reviewed and updated with subsequent versions on a maximum of a 4-year basis, that it will be reviewed. I think it was in regards to the audit plan, or perhaps, through you, Mayor, if Mr Reeve would like to explain in regards to the monitoring process of this strategy.
Yes, through you, Mayor. So under the Local Government Act there, these strategies are meant to be reviewed every 4 years. That's a mandatory measure. It's actually probably quite a good measure too, because it also
you can try and tie it in with other cycles as well at the same time, such as policy and strategic plan and so forth. So what I would be intending with this particular document, though, is to make sure that it is adaptable to any changes we might want to actually do over that period of time. If they were significant changes, then they would need to come back to council. If they weren't significant changes, then we'd like to be enacting those. And those type of changes may be that to do with those improvement actions there. Depending on how we go with those, there might be other ones we might want to add in as well. The last thing you want to do is actually have a dead document that sits on your shelf and meets the requirement of the Local Government Act, but that's about all it does. So that would be the intention going forward.
Great, thank you, Tahir. And also just to note what Mr. Reeve stated in regards to the environment, the asset management strategy refers to actively reducing council's environmental footprint by exploring where recycled product and more environmentally sustainable services can be used for provision of assets. So it's fantastic to see this named up in the strategy as well.
No other lights are on at this stage. Councillor Westwood, would you like to sum up? Closed. Motion moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Fox, is that the asset management strategy is attached to this report be approved by Council. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
Have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Street, Bastone, Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Midgley, Wasson, Winter, and those against? Councillor Grace, motion is carried. Next item, move to... Does anyone want a break? It's 5 past 7. We'll take a 5 minute break for those at home. Are we going to end the stream or was we good?
No.
No. The stream will keep going, but we'll be on mute. And we'll see you in about 5 minutes. Thanks for watching.